My name is Trent. I'm an alcoholic. Alfast, we need to speak a few weeks ago, and no bigger honor. I've been fortunate enough to... I've known Alf almost 6 years, I guess. Met him briefly. He was at my last weekend when we brought in recruits, because Fred, of course, is related to Alf, and I wanted as many people as possible at a party I was having, and so he called in Alf, and Alf brought a truckload of people, and anyways, we didn't really get to know each other all that well there, but I've got to know him a lot in the last year, and he is an example of exactly what works, and that's work on the program, and he's not afraid to share it, which is just as important in my eyes, because it doesn't do anything if we get the program and then we don't share it. And Alf is dedicated to sharing the program and sharing what he has, and that's a message of hope. And so, congratulations, Alf. It's been an honor to work with you, and been an honor to have you around in our group. We're very lucky at this group to have some of the people we have here, and Alf, of course, is one of those. So, I don't want to share too much about what it was like for me. I'm one of those guys that don't believe that's all that necessary. I think that most people here probably, or those who are here that are admitted alcoholics, know what it's like. They understand what it means to be an alcoholic. I'll give you a little bit of history as to kind of what brought me here quickly. I was born and raised in Halifax. I guess you'd just call a pretty normal family. I didn't think it was a normal family, of course. When I started to try to get sober, I thought that my family was, I think probably like a lot of other people think, it was a lot more messed up than it actually was. A big reason why it was messed up was because there was one messed up individual, and that happened to be me. Had my first drink at 12 years old. My brother introduced me to rye and grape juice. He would have been 14 at the time, so he didn't understand the magic of mixing proper drinks, that's for sure. I don't really know what happened, but I know I felt right. And the only reason why I know that is because I was talking to somebody the other day, and we were kind of talking about drinking when we were younger. When I was 13, I just decided in the middle of the afternoon, Saturday afternoon, had a hockey game at 5 o'clock, and I decided to just get into my parents' liquor cabinet. And the phenomenon of craving, which they talk about in the book and in the doctor's opinion, and as soon as we introduce alcohol into our bodies, the craving becomes so that we can't stop drinking. And at 13, that was present. Because as soon as I had, I just wanted one drink. I remember that. And the next thing you know, I was falling down drunk. And there was nobody home. It was just me. So there wasn't anything in my life that would have made, you know, nothing external. And I'm a believer that external things don't make us alcoholics. It's an internal condition. And, you know, my mother came home and I told her that I had taken Dristan and you know, the cough syrup and all that sort of stuff, and some adverse reaction, and I don't know what was wrong with me. And she's like, well, you got to go to hockey here. I have a couple sandwiches. So I threw up in the car. I didn't play hockey that night. And to this day, my mother is always hesitant when I take Dristan, even though she knows now, because I've told her years later, that that was actually one of my first real drinking experiences, where I drank to get drunk. And that pattern repeated itself for years. Whenever I did drink, I always snuck drinks. And even at 15, 16, 17, I'd be drinking with my friends, but I didn't want them to know how much I was drinking, so I was sneaking drinks behind their back, even though we were all drinking. And that's a pretty clear indicator to me anyways that I could never satisfy that craving. And eventually alcohol didn't give me anything anymore. And, you know, part of my story is other things, and in some ways I'm thankful for that, because I believe it took me down a lot faster than alcohol was taking me down pretty quickly, but I kind of more or less just magnified that by adding other things to the mix. By 19, legal age obviously here, nobody wanted me to drink anymore. I had done so many things by the time I was a legal age. I was hiding my alcohol at that point. So I was hiding it up until I turned 19, because you're not allowed to drink. And by the time I was 19, I had fucked up so many times that nobody wanted me to drink anyways. So from day one, I've been hiding my drinking, with the exception of people like Fred. And he's here too, so obviously that says something. I surrounded myself with the right kind of people. And, you know, the people who didn't get it and the people who didn't like being around people like me and probably some people in this room, they slowly pulled back, you know, and I used to curse them and say, you know, those sons of bitches, who do they think they are? They always think they're better than me. And they were, because they had something inside of them that made them feel okay. And I didn't. I didn't know what it was. I was missing something that other people had, and I didn't know what it was. And I only felt right when I had alcohol in my system, period. Never felt right. No matter what was going on in my life, I always felt like something was wrong. And I could never figure out what it was. I was introduced to the program in 1993 by a friend of my father who knew somebody in the police force who was in charge of their employee assistance program. And I'm not quite sure whether he got it or not. He introduced me to the program, but whether or not it was the program that I needed, I don't think it was. He was telling me to use a TV as my higher power if I needed to, and all the things that sometimes we hear in these rooms that didn't work for me. Now, whether or not I was ready, I don't know, but I know I didn't want to drink anymore. Every time I quit, I legitimately didn't want to drink anymore. You know, we have no defense. This the book tells us we have no defense against the first drink. The only defense I have against the first drink is having worked the steps and applying the program to my life. I believe there's two ways to treat our alcoholism, and we can choose to do it one of these two ways. And I choose the program, and I've only done that for about 6 years. There were 6 years there where I didn't understand what it took. So I'm trying to treat with the fellowship. And for me, there's a distinction, the fellowship and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. The fellowship is the meetings and the friends and the relationships we build, and then there's the program, which is the kind of the structured, you know, what we have to do, the work. And the fellowship wasn't keeping me sober, and I thought that's what I'm supposed to do. Like, people, meeting makers make it. Go to meetings, go to do all this sort of stuff. And I'm like, oh, okay, rah, 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 and I'm doing the travels to the meetings. I was down the South Shore doing that sort of stuff. And I could never get more than 6 or 9 months. It would be these anniversaries, and I'd be lying about stuff. And you know, if people here have heard it before, I was setting up the meeting in Chester because it was... I was fortunate enough to be around three other members who wanted to start a meeting in Chester, and we started it. I lived next door, so I'd set it up, and then I'd start drinking again. So I'd set it up early, sit in literally the house right next to the meeting and drink while the meeting was going on with the lights out. But I set it up, you know, so I was at least contributing. It was my level of service at that point. But if I'm going to treat it with the fellowship, then eventually I have to treat it with alcohol, and that's what happened. You know, I some people say that alcohol saved their lives, and I truly believe that. I think I would have killed myself if it wasn't for alcohol. There's no way I could have lived with the internal condition if it wasn't for alcohol. I couldn't live with who I was, and there was no answers. And that's the thing. I did all the psychotherapy and all this sort of stuff, and you know, my parents, and it's wonderful to see Alf's family here tonight, because it's a wonderful, wonderful thing to have the support of the family. My parents did everything they possibly could. They had no understanding of what they were dealing with. My father chased his father around for years in the city here. He actually had gone to some meetings, I guess, in the 60s, and it didn't work out for him. He died of, he died of liver cancer, so the odds are it was because of his alcoholism. But he still didn't understand, because people who don't drink don't, I mean, we're not just out there having fun. Like, that's the thing, and my family never understood that. They thought I was just partying too much. And it really doesn't come down to that, because it wasn't very much fun. Like, I don't know if... it's hard to explain to people who don't drink, and those who do drink obviously understand it, that the drinking is not a bunch of fun. You know, and every time I picked up a drink, I didn't want to. And that became... Well, I mean, I've told the story before. I was crying with a wheelbarrow of empty bottles on the way to the liquor store because I didn't want to do it. And that was the only way I could get money, or selling my mom's snowsuit out of her closet, or my grandmother's fur coat that had my mom's name sewed into the side that they called when they sold it. So that wasn't one of those experiences that my family, they didn't really understand. When my mother got the phone call, she just, you know, but again, they just said, you know, well, more therapy, that's got to work. And at whatever cost to them, I guess they gave it a shot. And so for 6 years, I bounced around this program and had no idea what I was doing. No idea whatsoever. But I was told by this guy from the police that, you know, if you keep drinking, these things are going to happen to you. It's going to be institutions, death, or jail. Or jail or death. And I did some pretty horrible things. I wasn't a nice drunk. I was friendly, But I did horrible things to get the money I needed to do the things I needed to do. And I've heard people say, you know, when you're sober up, you cheapen up. Well, I'm not going to do the things I did when I was drunk to get the money that I got when I was drinking. That's not who I am. Plus, I don't jail well. And I found that after 3 years in the program, I found myself in jail. And not like a weekend, you know. And I swore to myself, this is it. I'm never going back to jail. I'm never going to do it again. And no more than 30 days outside, and I was drinking again, even though it was a violation of my parole. I did not want to go back to jail. I did not want to drink, but I was drinking. And I still didn't know what to do. So, jumping forward anyways to 1999, I found myself in that weekend when Alf was there. And it was one of these big, huge drunks where you plan a couple weeks in advance and do all the manipulative things you need to do to get money. And 4.5 days later, I was being driven down to Lunenburg by my mother once again, who was there to actually get rid of me. They put a bond against me stating that I wasn't allowed near them, near the house, near all that sort of stuff. And they dropped me off. I said, that's it. No more. And I have a younger brother who... I mean, it's different, the connection you have with the younger. There's a huge gap, 18 years. So he would have been like 8 or 9 at that point. And they said, you're not to see him. You're not. So all of these things were really, really devastating. And I thought, this is it. This is it. I'm done. And I remember talking to the guy, and I said to the counselor, and I said, I can't do this anymore. And this is 6 years, 6.5 years in the program trying to get sober, and it wasn't working. And I was blaming the program. And... I said, I can't do this anymore. I just can't recover anymore. And he said, well, you're finally ready. And I didn't get it, you know. And all along, I was trying to recover. I was trying to do all these things that I thought I was supposed to do, only to find out all along that there was people there who would tell me what to do if I was just to listen, and that we could do it if you were to listen and to apply the things that somebody in the program is telling you. Now, mind you, I was getting a lot of mixed messages. I was getting a lot of wrong messages. I've learned through the Big Book to sift that out. You know, I believe that the Big Book, and I've heard other people say it, it's a bullshit sifter. You know, it allows you to, if you know what's in the Big Book, and somebody opens their mouth in a meeting and is not talking out of the Big Book, you'll know it. And you'll know whether or not to take what they're saying to heart and to actually apply it to your life, or you'll know whether they're talking out of their ass. And that's one of the gifts that this book has given me, is that I understand now who in this program knows what they're talking about and who doesn't. If nothing else, that's significant, because I can sit comfortably in a meeting and know what to listen to and what not to listen to. When I was first around the program, I didn't have a clue. I didn't know what people were talking about. I was hearing people say stuff, and I was taking it to heart, and I'm like, that's a good plan. You know, and they don't know any more about that sort of stuff than I know. I don't know anything about relationships, anybody more than anybody in here. I used to say, and this was one of my things, I used to say, this room has collectively lived my life. If I apply little bits and pieces from everybody else, I'll be able to live my life. Well, that's a load of crap. I can't tell somebody how to deal with a relationship. I can't tell somebody how to... Oh, I'm a financial advisor. Maybe I could help them with their finances. But I can't... there's all kinds of things I can't do. I just cannot do it. And yet, for all these periods in the program, I was trying to get these people to help me with all these different aspects of my life that they could not help me with. And they were legitimately trying to help me. And they're like, I don't know why that's not working. You know, and I'm like, well, maybe it's because you've been divorced 7 times. You know, and it never clued into me that I'm asking the wrong people for the wrong help. So I ended up drinking again when I got out of the detox, and that was the last time I ever drank. I basically blacked out for almost 3 days, and I was a blackout drunk. I was the type of guy who would wake up walking after a night downtown, have no idea where I'd gone, what I'd done, that sort of stuff, but it was perfectly functioning the whole night. And I had a card in my pocket, and I'd gone through the 28-day program in 1993 and met a guy named Eric C. A lot of you guys might know him. He's been around a long time. He'd gone to Crosby at 14 years. He'd retired and decided to take the effort to go ahead and do Crosby Center. And I'd run into him at a meeting at the detox, and he gave me his card. I was actually at an Al-Anon meeting, the only one I've ever been to in my life, and the only one, I shouldn't say the only one he's been to, but it's in the middle of nowhere. Like, I was in a detox in Lunenburg. We drove an hour to this meeting. He happened to be there. I hadn't seen him in years. Anyways, he gives me a card. So sure enough, I call this place, and they let me live there. And it's a 24-hour, long-term rehabilitation center, Alcare Place. And that gave me 10 months of learning how to live sober. I didn't learn how to recover in that house. It's there. The people running the place know more about recovery than I will probably ever know. But I wasn't listening, again. And, you know, God willing, I've stayed sober since then. But when I was there, I wasn't listening to what people were telling me. And people were telling me, I've got to do this, you've got to do that. These are the things that are going to help you stay sober for the rest of your life. And what did I do? I was kind of around the... I'm just trying to keep that from stopping. I was around the surface of the program again. I was doing service work. I was doing all the things that I thought I was supposed to do. I felt okay inside. I felt like I was a little bit better. I had removed the alcohol from my life. Of course I was better. And that's, you know, one of the things I've learned, that removing alcohol from my life will make my life better. But it's not a permanent solution. And I started to find that out. You know, I've had a lot of gifts in this program. Freddie coming into the program was one. I was almost 2 years sober when he got a phone call from him at my office. And he said that, I hear you have a birthday coming up. And this was a guy who a year later was trying to get booze off me. And not that I was carrying around booze. That sounds bad. I had won it as a prize. And he was there, saw it. Mine was bigger than his, so he wanted to trade. He was still drinking. You know, and I didn't ask my family to be at my first, and it is a regret. And I think that that's special and smart, because it's not a regret that I want to have. I did bring them to my fifth, but it's not the same. So I'll jump ahead to 4.5 years sober and going absolutely insane. I didn't understand what was wrong with me. I didn't understand why I felt the way I felt. I had done, you know, the central service work. I don't think I had done any general service work at that point. I was volunteering at Alcare Place, doing some stuff with the committee and helping their board whenever I could, and just little tiny things. And I'm like, why am I not getting this? Like, it's no better than drinking. Because I was going insane, and it was the internal condition that was screwing me up again. And I was starting to get that feeling again that this is untreatable. I'm going to have to treat this again. And my only solution up to that point was treating it with alcohol. And I truly believe that either the guilt of that last weekend or the 10 months at Alcare Place gave me 4.5 years of sobriety. Because I think that there's an amount of time that I used to get from guilt. If I did something horrible, depending on how horrible it was, I had a certain period of sobriety that was directly related to how horrible the thing was. So if I felt guilty enough, it might be a month's worth of guilt, you know, 2 weeks worth of guilt, whatever. 4.5 years of guilt. Or 10 months of living at Alcare. And that was, you know, I mean, and I don't want to make it sound like, my God, that was the thing that saved my life. Trust me, living at that house. I made friendships there that will be stronger than any friendship I'll ever make anywhere else. Present company excluded. I heard somebody else say the recuperative powers of the alcoholic ego are amazing, because I was one of those guys that would get drunk and then 2 or 3 days later, smoke clears, everything's okay, you know, I come back into the meetings and I start spewing my bullshit again, talking like I've been sober for years, like I know everything about the big book. I'd never read the big book once. Maybe that's why I was having problems. Yeah, that's definitely why I was having problems. You know, and I struggled in the meetings. There are people there, and this is just my opinion, you know, but a meeting maker won't make it without the program. I don't care how many meetings you go to. It's not going to fix the internal condition. I'll go slowly nuts just going to meetings, and I learned that. This program is built around the 12 steps. It's not a self-help group. It's a 12-step group. You know, and I've heard people compare it to going to the gym. And if you're going to the gym and you're sitting out front drinking protein shakes and talking to people, it's not going to be nearly as effective as the guy who comes in and hits the weights. Or the lady that comes in and hits the weights. Sorry. But that's the big difference for me. I mean, I can either do the work or I can't do the work. And what had happened at 4.5 years was that I realized I hadn't done anything. And somebody gave me a CD, and he's not here tonight. Fergie. I was hoping he'd be here. And the CD basically kicked my ass, more than anybody had ever kicked my ass before. And if anybody wants copies of this stuff, talk to me after the meeting, and I'll make sure you can get a copy. I've given out probably 100 of them in the last 12 months to people, and it pretty much has the same effect on most. They get angry first, and then they understand. So I decided, I've been in a relationship for a long time. I kind of left that out. But I had met a person in sobriety, and I got engaged. And, you know, she welcomed me into her life when I had absolutely nothing to give her. I was living at Alcare Place. And not that I recommend relationships for guys in Alcare Place. But I was in there, and I was in a relationship. So what can I say? But I decided, we were going to have the wedding late last year, and I decided, or she decided, that we should move the wedding up because her grandfather was ill. So we decided to do that. But I was planning on having the steps done by the time I got married. So now she said, well, we got 45 days instead of 9 months. And I was like, oh, shit. Because I had made that commitment to myself that I was not going to get into I wasn't going to get married until I had this shit taken care of. So I started on that process, and it's funny because I didn't realize until I got really into the book that there's no real, like, long, drawn-out process to the steps. Nowhere in the book does it tell us to take a year to do our steps. Nowhere does it tell us to take a step a year or anything like this. It says, actually, we set out on a vigorous course of action. After step three, vigorous course of action, got to start. You know, after five, just go home and sit there for an hour. Then do six and seven, bang, bang, like, the stuff's not supposed to take forever, and I didn't realize that until I got into it and started doing it, that it's not tough to do it quickly. It's actually easier to do it quickly than it is to do it over a long period of time. Because of the fact that once I got into it, I understood the benefits of doing it. And if nothing else, that's the one message I like to give, is that the hope of something better. I mean, my life was shit. I had no family, no friends, no job, no house. I was looking at jail again, you know, and this time it was going to be probably longer than a year. And so I'm thinking, oh, now I'm going federal or something, you know, and like, oh, maybe I can go to school or something. That'll be cool. You know, and these are the things that are going through my head. And at the same time, I'm trying to get my life back together and trying to get sober. So I'm doing the steps. I get through the fifth. Bang, bang, bang. I did nine. I realized today that nine wasn't done effectively enough. And the reason why, I'll get to that later. But what happened was, and they talk about it in Appendix 2 in the book, they say that there's varying types of spiritual experiences. And I understand mine was almost immediate. I have a God, you know, he's of my understanding. I choose to call him God. You know, I'm Baptist. It's not the same God that I grew up with, but he serves a much greater purpose than the one I grew up with. I went to do another fifth today. And the reason why I was saying I'd get to that later was, upon doing five today, I realized there was two people that I didn't do effective nines with, which was making my amends to those people last year. And it's been bugging me. You know, and I talked to my sponsor last night, and I said, I'm doing another fifth tomorrow night. I don't do it with my sponsor. I do it with a priest. And for some reason, when I first did it, I didn't want to burden my sponsor with the stuff I was going to be telling him, because I felt it was so horrific that I didn't want to, like, have it affect our relationship as friends. And now that I've done it with this priest, I choose to do it with him again. I see now the advantages of doing it with another alcoholic. But given that I had already spilled my guts for 4 hours with this guy, and he understood and put things in context, it made sense to do it again. So I did them last year. The spirituality all of a sudden blossoms. I understand what it means to have worked the steps. And I'm telling everybody that this is the way you got to do it. This is amazing. This is, it's, you know, the God shock kind of thing. And it's like, holy shit, wow. I can't believe for 4.5 years I wasn't doing this, because it was so immense, the change. I mean, it was a change at a molecular level. I mean, that's how big of a difference I felt. 30 days later, it's like I'd never done them. And I'm like, oh, this is just the same shit all over again. I don't understand what had happened in the 30 days. I don't understand why all of a sudden I'm feeling this way again. What's going on? I listened to another CD of the same guy, and it's on Working with Others. And I'm like, oh, shit. That's what I'm not doing. I wasn't working with anybody. I mean, I shared all this, and I told people all this sort of stuff, but I wasn't doing any work with anybody. And so I started doing, trying to find people to work with and friends, and I was doing the lame stuff by sending them stuff by email and saying, you got to do this, you got to do this, you got to do this. If you want to do it, I'll help you with it. Too close. They're friends. They're too close. They're not going to take that sort of stuff from me constructively. They have, you know, some have, some haven't. Some are far past where other guys were, and but it's not the same. I was fortunate enough to work with Alf. An amazing experience. Amazing. To see somebody work, unbelievable. And they talk about it, and I'm going to find page 89 in the book, Working with Others. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. And that, for me, is so true now. Every time my program starts to feel like it's missing something, that's where I go, Working with Others. And I realize there's so many other things that when it gets weak, that I'm not doing. Like I said last night, I talked to my sponsor, and I said, I'm doing another fifth. And he says, why are you doing a fifth if you're doing your tenth every night? And I didn't have an answer. I was like, that's a really good question. And I said, I'm not perfect. And he's like, oh, no, I wasn't saying that you were claiming to be perfect. Because I've made those claims before. But it's true. If I'm doing a tenth effectively, then I probably don't need to be doing a fifth every 8 months. You know, so by doing that today, it made me realize, you know, going through the exercise of the steps every set amount of time is important for me. But doing them every day is critical. Because if I don't do them, then that's going to build up all these other things that have caused me problems in the past. My character defects have not gone away. I know that from the last year. There's a lot less of them. And they're a lot, I guess, they're not as bad as they once were, but they're all there. Every time things start to go bad, you know, they creep up. And they creep up in different ways. And that's why I think that it's so important. And I'm, you know, I'm, I guess I'm being toned down tonight. Hey, Laura. I have a tendency to be a bit aggressive when I'm talking to people outside the rooms about the program, and that's because I don't feel it's my place to tell people exactly what they need to do. But I will tell you that outside if you ask me, because I know what's, I've been told, and it's in the book, and it's pretty simple. And I don't talk outside the book when I'm talking to a member. If they want to know what to do, I'll tell them exactly where to go in the book to find it. That's where all our answers are. That's all this program offers us. It doesn't offer us anything else. It you know, I mean, I consider myself a recovered alcoholic. Some people have a problem with me using that word. And I've heard it said in other places that they have a problem with me using that word. The book tells me I will recover from a hopeless state of mind and body. It uses the word recovered tons of times in the book. You know, it's in the very first page. This is how we have recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. That's all the program offers us. It doesn't offer us anything else. It's going to help me with my alcoholism. And through that, it's going to help me establish relationships back where I didn't have them before. It's going to allow me to be a productive member of society, which I think I've become. But it's a lot, it's amazing, because, you know, I'm coming up on 6 years. And at 4.5 years, I thought I was going nuts. You know, last month I was thinking, geez, man, like I got to get this. I start feeling the pressure again and doing the steps, because there's a little bit of pressure there. And I was doing exactly what I tell the guys that I work with not to do, which was take your time. And my priest was away on a cruise, so it was perfect. You know, I had that great excuse that I didn't have to do it right away. And when he called me back, it was like a curse and a blessing, because I knew I had like a week and a half to get everything done, and it didn't take me very long. But the hope for me is that I'll continue to do the stuff that the big book tells me I need to do. And it's frustrating, I guess, in some respects, because I can't say what I want to say. And I can only show people what's happened to me. And hopefully through this meeting, which I know is a huge part of a lot of people's lives, especially I'm not out here as much as I used to be. Because I'm in the big book study mostly, because that's where I find the most beneficial time for me is studying the big book. I find I want to bite my lip or my tongue. I find sometimes it's tough when I'm sitting in a meeting and we're not talking about the program and we're not talking about alcoholism. And that's what bothers me, and that's one of the reasons why I find it really, really important when I'm sharing to share about alcoholism, to share about the program. There's two things that I feel need to be talked about, and that's either someone who's looking for a solution or someone who's found it and willing to share it. And that's it. That's all this meeting room is supposed to be for. Because, like I said earlier, there's no way that this is going to help us with our relationships. It's not going to help us get a job. It's not going to help us find our lost dog. It's not going to help us do the things that we want outside of alcoholism. So, I find it tough sometimes, yeah. And we actually had this question because we have something online that we do as a group, and it's open to anybody who's interested. And we had that question whether or not, you know, should we sit by and not say anything, or should we just not stop going to that meeting if we don't find it's helpful? And my response was the way I feel is it's my role to be at that meeting, because at the very last chance, I need to be able to open my mouth and share the message of hope and tell somebody that if there's a newcomer in the room and he's hurting and he needs a drink, that there's a way out. He doesn't have to live like this anymore. You know, and I didn't hear that. I called a guy today who's, I hope he's alive. I mean, that's how bad he is. And that's really scary. And I just wanted to tell him that he doesn't have to live like this anymore. Because I was where he was at once. Everybody here who's a member was there once. I'm assuming so. If not, why are you here? You know, I mean, that's the reality of it. For those who don't feel like they've got it yet, that's it. It's right here. Guys like Alf, chomping at the bit to work with somebody. You know, he's a year sober, and he's ready to work with people. It has nothing to do with how long you've been sober. It has to do with the work you've done and the time you've been sober. And he's done a lot of work. There's a lot of guys in this meeting that have done, this group, that have done a lot of work. You know, and don't get me wrong, I love everybody in this program. It just scares me when I see it be different than it was when it was started. And anyways, you know what? It's been a phenomenal night to see Alf celebrate. It's nice to see Leo's family here as well. Another guy that's chomping at the bit to do some serious work. So, anyways, for those who aren't attending this meeting on a regular basis, please come back, because you know we love to have people here, and it's a great group. And the Big Book Study again is a phenomenal place. And if anybody wants a copy of the stuff that I got that turned my life around literally, because I was looking for a drink, and I listened to one person's message and it changed my world. Talk to me afterwards and I can get you copies of it. So anyways, it's great to be here and it's good to be sober. God bless you. Thanks.